votes in a web of deception. The GOP stole the election. It's a good thing that Saddam was captured, hiding in a hole just like a rat would. Now they're saying that the war went on because their intelligence won. Where are the weapons of mass destruction?
Welcome to my Inside Scoop on Washington, where we bring you all the news from the nation's capital that the government does not want you to know. Today, of course, with that special theme music, is Election Tuesday, where every Tuesday from now until that most important Election Tuesday on November 2nd, 2004, we work to discuss the political issues, and I work to do what the song says, kick out the Republicans. I should say, though, I want to kick out the Republicans in government, the ones that are leading us into this massive job loss and to this horrible war in Iraq and so forth. One of the Republicans I do not want to kick out, though, is my guest today. He's a frequent guest in Iraq and so forth. One of the Republicans I do not want to kick out, though, is my guest today. He's a frequent guest on these Election Tuesdays. His name is Tom Robbins, and he is the Utah chair of the College Republican National Committee. And I invite him on every Tuesday because, well, it's important to hear the other side. I very much believe in hearing the other side, unlike some talk show hosts. And so he keeps me honest, I keep him honest, and hopefully we keep all of you listening. If you want to call in and challenge anything I have to say or anything Tom has to say, we always welcome your involvement. All you have to do is pick up the phone and dial toll-free 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP, or you can send an email to comment@radioinsidescoop.com. Tom, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Thanks for having me, Mark. Just a busy day rolling up the sleeves.
To not pay for the war in Iraq, to not pay for the tax cuts to the very rich that he gave, and instead to make young people pay twice the amount of taxes 10 years from now. Why should a college student accept the credit card debt that the Bush administration has run up on him?
Well, I think that basically what you're looking at here is a situation where you might have some criticism of George W. Bush and how he's paying for the war and what needs to be done to be able to make that happen. But when you look at Senator Kerry's record, a record which he refuses to talk about...
Well, no, you're changing the subject, though.
He consistently has proposed programs far beyond exceeding any type of pork or any type of realm. In fact, I would suggest a new name for John Kerry. I'm going to call him Kerry Claus.
Well, you know, of course you're going to attack Kerry because that's what they said you would do. And listen, we will go. I'll be happy to talk about John Kerry and his record, but I'd like you to answer my question. George Bush is giving us the largest budget deficit in American history. He could have, like every other president in the past, the Korean War, World War II, every other war, has been paid for. If the American people want to go to war, they pay for it. This is the first president to say, you know what, we don't want to pay for this war. We want young people, people your age, Tom, people in college, we want you to pay 10 years from now because we don't think that wealthy people should have to pay for the war today. Totally apart from anything you don't like about John Kerry, can you agree with me that it's a mistake to put it on the backs of future generations?
Well, I think the stakes are so high and that whether or not we establish a democracy in Iraq is so important. I think George W. Bush and the Republican-led Congress have made the important decisions that, you know, all the senators basically and the majority of the United States Congress sent them there, and I think we need to fund them. And
Tom, we can fund them. I'm fine. But shouldn't we pay for the funding? It's a simple question. I'm not talking about whether you support the war in Iraq or not. I think that's a separate issue. Assume we all supported the war in Iraq, which is a big assumption, okay? It's costing hundreds of billions of dollars. The question is, should we tax people now, in other words, make people today, you know, those multimillionaires running, those CEOs that have massive salaries, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars, 40, 50-year-olds who are living today, who support the war in Iraq, should they pay for the war, or should your kid brother who's 16 or 14 or kids in college today who barely have enough debt themselves, should they pay for the war? Assuming that we want the war, who should pay for it, Tom?
I think we should all have to pay for it, because I think it's a sacrifice for all
Americans. Why don't
Americans,
we pay today?
I think that as we go forth in our economy, you keep on saying these wealthiest Americans, those that are making hundreds of millions
right.
and billions of dollars. I mean, you're talking about such a small fraction of society.
I'm talking about
the burden on them.
I'm talking about the only people who've done better under George W. Bush. If you look at the statistics, you can see that people in the bottom 90%, which is most of us, have not done better under George W. Bush. The only people who've done better are the CEOs. They are making hundreds of times what a worker used to make when they used to make, you know, 10 and up to 50 times under Clinton. CEOs are making hundreds of millions of dollars while the stock market falls 2,000 points below where it was 4 years ago. They're doing better. My question to you is, let me see if I can answer this specific question, okay? We have a war. We have all kinds of things that George Bush wants to pay for. The question is, should today's generation pay for it, or should future generations pay for it? Should we pay for it cash on the barrel, or should we run up a credit card debt with interest for future generations? That specific question, what do you think?
I think in realizing the situation that we're in, there's going to have to be some sacrifices that are made by future generations in order to pay for democracy in Iraq and to have that stabilization and to have those seats flourish. So I think it's appropriate for future generations to pay, but I also think there's going to be some shift and there's going to be some things. And I think you're mischaracterizing as far as saying that people are so worse off as they were. I mean, if you look at minority home ownership, you set a new quarterly record of 50.8% in the first quarter. It's up from where it was, and it's, you know, setting new records. Home ownership is one of the things that you look at as people actually investing, people actually moving ahead, and minority home ownership is up from where it was 4 years ago when Bill Clinton was president.
Tom, that's really interesting. Are you getting these talking points from the Republican Party there?
I think, you know, I get my talking points from a variety of different sources.
Oh, okay,
but,
all right.
You know, they come from, they're all documented, you know, and you can
look. I'm glad to know that minority home ownership, which has increased every year, can continue to increase. My question is, though, what is it about George Bush's economic policy that has failed? He promised us 3 years ago, when he did his tax cuts, that we would increase jobs by at least 2.5 million over 4 years. Now, it's interesting, of course, Bill Clinton gave us 20 million jobs, 22 million, actually, over 8 years. So he gave us more than 2.5 million jobs per year. Bush promised he'd at least give us 2.5 million jobs over 4 years, and instead we've lost more than 1 million jobs over 4 years. My question for you is, what about the tax cut? What about Bush economic policy has failed us so?
I don't think it's the Bush economic policy. I think if we're looking at indications that the economy is improving, nearly 1.3 million jobs have been added since the beginning of the year. But look at it this way. September 11th.
Since the beginning of the year.
We've been under as far as domestically being attacked worse than we ever had in our nation's history or in our lifetimes. To be able to deal with that economic crisis could have been far more devastating as far as the economic fallout into our economy. Bush was a strong leader who brought the nation together and was able to calm the fears early on improving. Nearly 1.3 million jobs have been added since the beginning of the year, but look at it this way. September 11th.
Since the beginning of the year.
We've been under as far as domestically being attacked worse than we ever had in our nation's history or in our lifetimes. To be able to deal with that economic crisis could have been far more devastating as far as the economic fallout into our economy. Bush was a strong leader who brought the nation together and was able to calm the fears early on and be able to, I think, stop a political fallout or an economic fallout that would have happened after that political fallout.
See, Tom, I've never really understood that argument. After Pearl Harbor, December 7th, 1941, the last great attack on American soil until September 11, 2001. We went to a war footing. FDR put our economy in a war footing. He actually taxed people to pay for the war, quite high taxes, you might recall. And our economy entered a great boom on through the 50s into the 60s. War, most economists will tell you, improves the economy. In fact, a lot of the blip that we've seen is because we're spending, we're going into debt on our credit card, hundreds of billions of dollars paying for the war in Iraq. I understand that. I know if you run up your credit card debt, you live high on the hog for a little while. But war helps the economy. Why is it that uniquely under George W. Bush, war apparently isn't helping the economy?
Well, as far as comparing where America's at and the way the world occurs, Pearl Harbor versus September 11th is...
What are we getting for this big deficit he's running up? What are we buying?
Well, what we're going to buy if we elect John Kerry to be our president of the United States is he's basically proposed $1,910,859,050,000 in new initiatives or program or increased spending. But he's only found $658 billion dollars to pay for that, leaving us with about $1 trillion that we got to come up with, because Kerry Klaus has decided to go around the nation and basically whatever group he's in front of, he offers them promises, he offers them incentives, basically throws the pork their way, not really explaining how he's going to pay for it. I think it's reckless, it's irresponsible, and this tax and spend liberal is basically going to drive the deficit bigger.
I got to say, that's hilarious to me. I want to say, Pot, do you know Kettle here? I mean, Pot's calling the kettle black. Here you have a president who took a $5 trillion projected surplus, taking us to a $5 trillion projected deficit, a difference of $10 trillion. A president who, when he says he's going to cut the deficit, people laugh. Economists laugh. Everyone knows that it's just not true. He has the biggest pork bills of any time. We have special benefits for bow and arrow manufacturers and tackle box makers, and Lockheed is getting all kinds of things. Halliburton is getting no-bid contracts, which they're helpfully committing fraud on to take more from the taxpayers. And you're complaining that Kerry's numbers don't add up? That's really funny to me.
Well, I think, you know, if you're going to be arguing on one side of your mouth saying that George W. Bush is so reckless and irresponsible, you need to look at basically Kerry's plan, which, you know, Kerry Klaus has got over $1 trillion in programs. He doesn't know how he's going to pay for it. He's just going off, just kind of spewing off things.
Actually, Kerry's the only one that said a way to pay for it. He's already talked about the fact that on 2% of Americans, he's going to raise taxes, and on the other 98%, he's going to keep the tax cut. So at least Kerry is giving away. I mean, look, I think you and I know, Tom, and I think our listeners know, and I want to make sure our listeners get a chance to call in at 877-57-SCOOP. I think most of us understand that politicians promise pie in the sky. And they do that because the American people don't want to admit the clear truth, which is if you want something, you should pay for it. Not only you should pay for it, you have to pay for it. Whenever we run up these huge deficits, okay, whether under any president, although I think it's fair to say the Republicans are far more big spenders than Democrats ever have been. Just look at Ronald Reagan and George Bush Sr. and George Bush Jr. versus Bill Clinton for evidence of that. When you have these big spending programs, again, mostly under Republican governments, what that means is that it helps the economy for short term, just like you get a short term fix if you go out on your credit card and buy a bunch of things you like. But then the bills come due, and they come due on future generations. And right now, the only reason why we haven't suffered worse is because the Chinese and the Japanese have been lending us all this money that, frankly, they're going to call in. This, I think, was a very good point made by Bill Clinton at the Democratic National Convention. They're going to call in their debt, our bankers, and then we really owe a lot of money.
Speaking of Bill Clinton, I just have a brief question for you. At his convention speech, you know, where he got up there and pumped up the crowd, he talked about how now, because, you know, of his book, which he's written about his sex life and everything like that, has sold millions of copies, that he's actually part of the percentage of Americans which you quote-unquote call the wealthiest.
That's
right?
True.
And he said that he was one of those people who got the tax break.
That's right.
If Bill Clinton cares so much about the power of big government and bureaucracy to be able to change people's lives, he doesn't think it's full of gluttony and red tape and it can actually deliver results, why don't people like Bill Clinton and John Kerry give back the money to the federal government and just write a blank check to him?
There's the answer. Bill Clinton and John Kerry support everyone getting an unfair shake from the federal government having to give back the money. Somehow this idea, and I love it when Republicans make this argument, that those of us, I mean, here you have a guy like John Kerry acting against his economic interests, Bill Clinton acting against his economic interests. They believe that the American public, that the regular American, that the secretary slash waitress working two jobs to feed her children, that she needs a break. But Bush and Cheney, no, they think that, only those that care about the poor should give to the poor. The rest of us, we don't give anything about the rest of Americans. We don't like regular Americans anyway. As George Bush put it, this I thought was a very interesting comment here, and I want to know what you think about this. He was in church the other day hearing what I think used to be the main message of Jesus, the main Christian message, that we do look out for the poor. We look out for those that are struggling. Jesus said it's easier for a camel to go through an eye of a needle than a rich man to enter heaven. And when he heard that message, he not only was not real happy with the preacher for giving that message, he made a comment about taxes. He said, well, really rich people, they dodge taxes anyway. What does it mean to have a president who says, really rich people, they dodge taxes anyway? Shouldn't we have really rich people pay their taxes?
Well, I think you're just dealing with the reality, Mark. I think he's actually talking in terms that make sense and which actually happen from day to day, whether or not you want to deal with them or not.
But can't we change that?
People who have a lot of money are going to spend the time to be able to, you know, hire a whole team of accountants if they want to be able to find those loopholes.
Why don't we make laws to close those loopholes?
Well, that's what, you know, President Bush has tried to do. He's tried to end the death tax to protect the American farmer, to allow them to be able to pass on their inheritance, where John Kerry is basically, you know, is not sure whether or not, with $1 trillion of proposed new spending and new government programs and new initiatives and new fat, he doesn't know how he's going to pay for it. Eventually, he's going to go from that 2%, it's going to be 4% and 6% until it's the same old tax and spend.
To me, this just sounds like you got an alcoholic and he's in the gutter and he's drinking everything he can, lying there, and he looks up and there's a guy with a beer and he says, "You bought a beer! Bad! Bad! Don't buy that beer," he says from his drunken stupor in the gutter. The biggest spender of all time is complaining that Kerry's numbers don't add up. I think that's really laughable. And I want to challenge you on that so-called death tax, the estate tax. But we got to go to a commercial break, and I want to give my callers a chance to call in. Number's 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP. Or you can send an email to comment@radioinsidescoop.com. Join in the debate. Bring it on. That's what America's all about. We'll be right back with more of Election Tuesday right after this.
Something major is taking place in our country that corporate chieftains don't want us talking about. Jobless creep. It's no longer just blue-collar families that are seeing their jobs hauled offshore to faraway havens of low-wage production. Now it's hundreds of thousands and soon to be millions of well-paying white-collar and high-tech jobs that are being shipped overseas by America's wage-busting CEOs. And joblessness is creeping quietly but relentlessly upward, ensnaring families that previously thought that they were solidly entrenched in the upper reaches of the middle class. CEOs are paranoid about any public discussion of this explosive movement, but internally, they giddily exult at the prospect of essentially abandoning our country and its middle class in order to fatten their profits on foreign workers. IBM, which is leading the way, even has coined a corporate euphemism for moving more and more of its white-collar jobs out of the country: global sourcing. The rush is on. A Microsoft executive has instructed department heads in this software giant to think India and, quote, to pick something to move offshore today. This is deliberate job destruction, but it's also much more. It's an open assault on America's middle class and on America's unifying social ethic that we're all in this together. Corporate executives and their apologists say that this is simply the immutable workings of the market and that, after all, the CEO's sole responsibility is to enrich the bottom line of top shareholders with no obligation to an American middle class. This is Jim Hightower saying, fine. But as CEOs have no obligation to us, why should we feel any obligation to them? As they separate themselves and their corporate fortunes from the well-being of our families, communities, and country, we should begin to separate them from the special tax breaks, enormous subsidies, regulatory favors, political privileges, and all the other advantages that they've gotten from us.
Hi, this is Doug Dupuy for SelectQuote, and I just called
Cheryl Payne,
one of SelectQuote's licensed agents.
Hi, Mr. Dupuy.
Hi, Cheryl. Why buy term life insurance through SelectQuote instead of somebody else?
Well, Mr. Dupuy, about 2 out of 3 people have health or lifestyle issues. Could be high blood pressure, skydiving. Now, depending on what insurance company you choose, you could overpay hundreds of dollars a year.
Well, where does SelectQuote come in?
SelectQuote's a real matchmaker. We impartially shop the pick of America's top life insurers to match you with your best buy.
Got an example?
Sure. I just matched a man 40 years old who takes cholesterol medication with a $500,000 policy for under $22 a month.
Quite a match, Cheryl. Why not let SelectQuote match you with your best buy? Just call 1-800-772-8300. That's 1-800-772-8300. Or log on to SelectQuote.com.
Examples: First Colony Preferred, Best Colony, 10-year term, policy form 1420 and 1421 et al. Underwritten by First Colony Life Insurance Company, a GE Financial Assurance Company, Lynchburg, Virginia. Policy subject to underwriting approval, available in most states.
Bush says he cares about the middle class, but the giant corporations get all the cash. We got a $500 billion deficit. It's time to make the Republicans quit.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. We're talking about what the song says. There's a $500 billion deficit. Bush says he cares about the middle class, but the giant corporations get all the cash. And as Bush very glibly admitted, hey, rich people, they don't pay taxes anyway. Instead of focusing on how to stop that and how to make rich people pay taxes, they're going to go around and attack what John Kerry did in Vietnam 30 years ago. My guest, though, disagrees with me. That's why I invite him here on Election Tuesday to bring balance to the show. His name is Tom Robbins, the state chair of the Utah College Republicans. And Tom, before we left, we were talking about, you were giving your statistics, I was giving mine, we can argue about statistics. I don't think there's much argument, though, when the new jobs that are being created are almost all lower-paying jobs. These aren't the jobs at the very top. But I want to ask you a more philosophical question, I guess, and it comes with what I was talking about before the break. And that is this. It always struck me as strange that you have a weird mixture in your party. You've got the business Republicans, the people who really care about corporations, the CEOs making hundreds of millions of dollars, the people that have parties with the statues that have vodka coming out of various orifices. And then you also have in your party the moral majority. You have the fundamentalist Christians, the ones who want to sort of control all our lives and tell us, you know, who to sleep with and things like that. Here's my question that I've never quite understood. When I look at Christianity, at least from its founding, when I look at the words of Jesus, when I look at the Bible says you should care about the poor. It says time and time again, look out for the widow, look out for the orphan. As I said before the break, Jesus said it's easier for a camel to go through the eye of a needle than a rich man to enter heaven. The Catholic Church has very much taught give up earthly wealth. How is it that these two elements in the Republican Party, how can a good Christian who I believe a good Christian should care about the poor, correct me if I'm wrong, how is it that a good Christian can believe in this Republican transfer of wealth from the poor to the rich?
Well, personally speaking, I can always, speak for my personal
Well, speak for yourself.
As somebody who spent 2 years in southern Argentina as a missionary to talk to people about Christianity and the words of Jesus, I would say this, is that when you want to be able to help those, you actually want to be able to extend the hand of humanity. You want to do so in the most effective manner. And time again, we just see that government is not always the best as far as bringing people together and getting what needs to be accomplished done in a timely manner.
But Jesus condemned the government of his time for not providing enough for the poor. And I just don't understand. When I see the signs, what would Jesus do, the first thought in my mind is not capital gains tax cut. It just isn't. I don't see Jesus preaching, give a capital gains tax cut. He gave fish and loaves, to the masses. I don't understand why the very strong Christians like yourself can support this ideology that to me is so anti-poor. I do want to say I think the Catholic Church is a good example of very strong Christian beliefs, but really looking out for the poor in America, and I don't see that among some of the Christians, the Protestant Christians and the Republicans. I'm sorry. Maybe I'm being vicious here.
I think you're making a broad generalization there that people just because they're Republican don't care about the poor. As far as the Christian philosophy, I don't know if I can speak for myself, is I think that you want to help people be able to help themselves. You want to be able to lift them up. And the best way to do that, I find, is often through, private-based or foundations. I'd rather see Bill Clinton with all this extra money that he says he shouldn't be getting, give that to, a specific fund. If he gives it directly to the United States and says, here, go fight AIDS with it, it'll get like 5 cents, 20 cents,
well, he's actually
on the dollar that if it happens. But if he gives it to a specific charity, which he can research, and he's allowed to give his money to that organization, you're going to get a bigger benefit. That's just the way.
Okay,
let's look at the way this
works. And by the way, Bill Clinton has done tremendous work on AIDS. In fact, he did something better than giving his money. He actually used his power of persuasion and his power of his former office to get the pharmaceutical companies to lower their drug prices so that poor people around the world can get needed AIDS drugs at a lower cost. But my question is this: why should it be that the extreme wealth, Anna Nicole Smith gets hundreds of millions of dollars for sleeping with an 80-year-old man, and you think that should be tax-free because you want to get rid of the estate tax? Why should Anna Nicole Smith get the hundreds of millions of dollars for sleeping with with an old guy, and then it's her noblesse oblige? She gets to give it wherever she likes. Wouldn't it be better to have a government that takes extra money from people who aren't using it, like Anna Nicole Smith, and gives it to people in need rather than saying, well, I think Anna Nicole Smith should decide who should get the money?
Well, Mark, I think, you know, we live in a situation where we need to have a little bit of entrust with the citizens of the United States of America that if given the opportunity and given good information, that they'll be able to give when there's a time of need. I think when situation arises, as far as, you know, after September 11th, the Red Cross literally could not take down fast.
You're right.
The contact
You're
information
absolutely
and
right.
the name of people. I think the Red Cross, if we were to give that money directly to the federal government and said, hello, federal government, I want you to take care of, you know, the victims after September 11th, you know, the money would have been diluted, it would have been lost, it would have been, you know, bureaucracy, but the Red Cross was able to deliver. The American people are compassionate people, and I think they should be given the benefit of that.
Some are, and some aren't. I mean, that's the answer. Should we basically punish the compassionate? Should we say that if you're greedy, if you're a really greedy CEO, like some of these people at Enron are, and you can steal, you know, $1 billion from California consumers and put it in your pocket and you don't want to give it back, well, you know, that's your choice. But if you're a compassionate person, you should give away all your wealth and basically live like a monk or a nun. Why shouldn't we have a society that provides for the poorest, that allows everyone a chance at success, gives them basic education, basic health care, and then lets them rise as far as their talents lie? Isn't that a better vision for America?
Well, I think what we differ in is the kind of, not that people shouldn't be given the opportunity or shouldn't be able to be given the hand of humanity. It's just the vehicle for being able to do that. I find the federal government to be a large, cumbersome kind of a giant that you kick it, you know, in its head. It doesn't feel in its leg until maybe a year later. I would just see more focuses, more initiatives and tax breaks given to those organizations, whether they're faith-based or not, to be able to deliver the services and the goods that are needed, like the American Red Cross, to be able to tap into that conservative feeling that I think we have of compassion in America today.
Well, I think we do that already, and I'm glad we do. In addition to the Red Cross, the government gives money to Catholic charities, I know, and gives money to Protestant charities, Jewish charities. I mean, already it's given, and that's been done for decades. The only difference in Bush's faith-based initiative is Bush wants the right to discriminate. Right now, we can give to Catholic, Jewish, Protestant, Muslim charities as long as they don't discriminate, as long as they hire people of all religions. Bush now wants to add that religious discrimination does. But you can see that the GI Bill, providing for education, there's some, I mean, we can argue over which programs work and which programs don't work, but are you going to say that government programs never work? You're not to Catholic, Jewish, Protestant, Muslim charities as long as they don't discriminate, as long as they hire people of all religions. Bush now wants to add that religious discrimination does. But you can see that the GI Bill, providing for education, there's some, I mean, we can argue over which programs work and which programs don't work, but are you going to say that government programs never work? You're not going
to
say
Let me
that.
Talk to you about a specific example.
Okay.
As an intern 2 summers ago, I was able to go to the floor of Congress and hear Secretary of State Colin Powell address all the interns there, at which point during the question and answer period, being the somewhat outspoken person that I am, I said, Secretary Powell, you've given a great speech. You've talked about compassion around the world. I have a group of friends. We're trying to build a school in Ethiopia. We've contacted, but we're having a problem getting funding from USAID. It's obviously a very cumbersome project. And after some discussion, he very gracefully allowed me to bring my proposal over to the Secretary of State's office and talk to some people over at the Ethiopian embassy. But even with that help and even with that push coming from Colin Powell, the amount of paperwork, the bureaucracy, the forewind off on was just to the point, even with his help, in the end, we just decided to bypass that and go for private funding.
Tom, why do you think those paper, why you need, that's why you need, what? A lot cheaper to educate a kid than to imprison him for the rest of his life. It costs them $50,000 a year to imprison kids, and they grow up in prison, and we have the highest prison rate of any nation in the world. Used to be South Africa and the Soviet Union had more than we. Now we have the highest per capita. That's $50,000 a year of kids in prison for things like doing drugs, when it'd be much better, it seems to me, to teach them not to use drugs. It would help our economy. It would help these kids to have treatment centers. Why is it that, and of course about going to jail, because he's got his daddy's friends and lawyers to help get him out of it.
Well, let's take the example of Chicago, where I actually grew up in the northwest suburbs there, who you've had, many minorities and a poor population, which has been basically under the control of a democratically controlled city of Chicago for more years than I can remember, as far as the Daley dynasty. And the liberals in the beginning, you know, in the 60s said, well, we need to take care of this problem. These people need housing. What we're going to do is we're going to build these high-rises, these massive, basically, high-rises, and cram them all together. They said if we just throw money at it, if we just build these beautiful parks and these huge, massive buildings, we'll take care of it. Well, what happened? There wasn't accountability. There wasn't responsibility mechanisms in place, and these places deteriorated to the point where just recently in the last couple of years they've been torn down because the liberal method of just throwing money at it and without that accountability or without that mechanism to be able to lift yourself up and just getting a paycheck at the end of the month really wasn't working, and it seems to be failed.
Maybe I'm going to surprise you here, but I agree with you. I think that the high rises at Cabrini Green were a big mistake. I think that Bill Clinton's policy, you're talking now about sort of 70s policy, 60s policy. I think Bill Clinton's policy of workfare makes more sense. Look, I'm willing to recognize when ideas work and when they don't work. You can call it liberal ideas or not. You know, I think that Lyndon Johnson's war on poverty actually worked pretty well. We helped a lot of rural people across the nation get things like electrification and all kinds of things in the 60s and 70s. You never hear Republicans talk about that. The point is it's really broader. Then some programs work and some don't. I'm more than willing to accept that. I'm more than willing to argue about which ones work and which ones don't work. What bothers me is where you have this sense of entitlement among those that inherit hundreds of millions of dollars that, oh, if I inherit hundreds of millions of dollars, I don't ever have to work. I'm better than you. I don't have to contribute to my country at all, while people who are really struggling to get by have to contribute much more. That's the basic sense of fairness I'm trying to get to understand. Yes, Kerry's done very well. Bill Clinton's done very well, but they believe that in a country where we all help each other, frankly, I think that that is the foundation of most religions, Christianity, Judaism, it's all looking out for each other. What is it, this selfishness that I see among some, not certainly not all, but the Republicans that don't want to at all share and help their country, they just want to grab it all for themselves. Where does that come from?
Well, you know, I think that basically what you're talking about is you're setting an example of Anna Nicole Smith. When you have 280 million people living in a country, I think it's unfair to, on a show, characterize basically how America feels or how they operated based on Anna Nicole Smith. Because then you could look at the Democratic base, which is the Hollywood Democrats who go off and spew and talk about how bad it is to you know, go into Iraq for oil, but roll up into the Academy Awards in their stretched limos and their private airplanes and helicopters.
But you know what? People attack Hollywood. And I understand Republicans attack Hollywood. But to me, it's a very big difference between Hollywood and these CEOs.
And Anna Nicole Smith.
Well, and Anna Nicole Smith, I'll tell you the difference. The difference is that people in Hollywood,
how America feels or how they operated based on Anna Nicole Smith. Because then you can look at the Democratic base, which is the Hollywood Democrats who go off and spew and talk about how bad it is to you know, go into Iraq for oil, but roll up into the Academy Awards and their stretched limos and their private airplanes and helicopters.
But you know what? People attack Hollywood. I understand Republicans attack Hollywood. But to me, it's a very big difference between Hollywood and these CEOs.
And Anna Nicole Smith.
I'll tell you the difference. The difference is that people in Hollywood are people with some talent. They got rewarded, mostly people from modest backgrounds. And I think that the Republicans don't like that they actually did make it, that they actually did live the American dream. And I think the reason why Hollywood stars generally, though certainly not universally, do care about people is because they were once people of modest means, just the way John Edwards remembers where his parents came from. And no, I'm not going to offend every person in Hollywood, of course not. But when you have a system that it seems to me much more when you have someone with a lot of wealth who's willing to share it. You know, this, you know, I know this, when you have millions and millions of dollars, I just don't think it makes a big difference in your lifestyle if you've got $27 million in the bank or
things that he was involved in over 35 years ago in Vietnam.
Right.
What troubles me is I think for America to have a debate whether or not we really want John Kerry to basically less than 3 minutes talking about 20 years that he spent in the United States Senate in his votes. I mean, what substantive thing has he done in the United States Senate? Why does
I can tell you what he did talk about some, but I can tell you what he's done. He actually was very big in balancing the budget. Interestingly,
what does he want to talk about it?
Well,
I'll
tell you why.
Kerry goes in front of America.
When you go,
he runs from 20 years.
Well, I don't think he's run from it at all.
He
mentioned his balancing the budget. He mentioned the stuff he's done for health care. He mentioned what he's done in terms of ending the animosity in Vietnam. He mentioned those, but I think that if you
mention Vietnam over, and
well,
over
but also in the Senate, what he did. My point is this: is that if you're a candidate, I think Dukakis may have failed in this regard. If you give detail after detail after detail on a convention speech, you run the risk of boring people. And I think, you know, if you want to know what John Kerry's done in the Senate, if you want to know how he believes on anything, he said what you do. You go to johnkerry.com and you can, I think
yeah,
that if you...
Yeah, Vietnam over and
well, no,
over
no, but also
again.
In the Senate, what he did. My point is this, is that if you're a candidate, I think Dukakis may have failed in this regard. If you give detail after detail after detail on a convention speech, you run the risk of boring people. And I think, you know, if you want to know what John Kerry's done in the Senate, if you want to know how he believes on anything, he said what you do. You go to johnkerry.com and you can find detailed policy. No, no, but also in the Senate what he did. My point is this, is that if you're a candidate, I think Dukakis may have failed in this regard. If you give detail after detail after detail on a convention speech, you run the risk of boring people. And I think, you know, if you want to know what John Kerry's done in the Senate, if you want to know how he believes on anything, he said what you do. You go to johnkerry.com and you can find detailed policy prescriptions on everything, healthcare, jobs. If you want to know how he believes on anything, he said what you do. You go to johnkerry.com and you can find detailed policy prescriptions on everything, healthcare, jobs, education, foreign policy, everything. I think when you give a convention speech, and it was long as it was. It was 55 minutes, and then the press, this is a whole other issue, which really makes me mad, but ABC, CBS, and NBC says, all right, you get 1 hour, that's it, that's all we're showing the American public, and he has to rush. He had a limited amount of time. The media capped his time, which I think is very unfortunate. So he had to set out, I think, a vision for America, because I think that that's what you can do in an hour speech. When you give a State of the Union, you can talk about the details of a program, and like I said, they're easily findable for anyone that looks on the Internet. But he had to talk about his vision, and I think the difference, and the reason why Kerry keeps mentioning Vietnam, is not just because he's a war hero, but because I think that most of us in this world, 98% of us perhaps, have had some.
I think in George W. Bush's family, you know.
If you have any question about George Bush's service, there's a very long essay on my website, www.radioinsidescoop.com, AWOL, war hero. But because I think that most of us in this world, 98% of us perhaps, have had some.
I think in George W. Bush's family, you know.
If you have any question about George Bush's service, there's a very long essay on my website, www.radioinsidescoop.com, AWOL. In that very lengthy essay, I have several dozen in this world, 98% of us perhaps, have had some.
I think in George W. Bush's family, you know.
If you have any question about George Bush's service, there's a very long essay on my website, www.radioinsidescoop.com, AWOL. In that very lengthy essay, I have several dozen documents, the actual documents showing up on the website.
You know,
if you have any question about George Bush's service, there's a very long essay on my website, www.radioinsidescoop.com, AWOL. In that very lengthy essay, I have several dozen documents, the actual documents showing up on the website where you can look at the exact orders where George Bush was ordered to attend such and such place. My point was a large.
It's www.swiftboatveteransfortruth.
On my website, www.radioinsidescoop.com, AWOL. In that very lengthy essay, I have several dozen documents, the actual documents showing up on the website where you can look at the exact orders where George Bush was ordered to attend such and such place. My point was a large.
It's www.swiftboatveteransfortruth.com.
You know, I wanted to get there.
And
I wanted to get there.
Talk about the people who served with him.
All right, www.radioinsidescoop.com, AWOL. In that very lengthy essay, I have several dozen documents, the actual documents showing up on the website where you can look at the exact orders where George Bush was ordered to attend such and such place. My point was a large.
It's www.swiftboatveteransfortruth.com.
You know, I wanted to get there.
And
I wanted to get there.
Talk about the people who served with him.
I want to get well. In that very lengthy essay, I have several dozen documents, the actual documents showing up on the website where you can look at the exact orders where George Bush was ordered to attend such and such place. My point was a large.
It's www.swiftboatveteransfortruth.com.
You know, I wanted to get there.
Talk about the people who served with him.
I want to get there, and I can't wait to discuss that with you, but first I want to go to a call. Very lengthy essay, I have several dozen documents, the actual documents showing up on the website where you can look at the exact orders where George Bush was ordered to attend such and such place. My point was a large.
It's www.swiftboatveteransfortruth.com.
You know, I wanted to get there.
Talk about the people who served with him.
I want to get there, and I can't wait to discuss that with you, but first I want to go to a caller who's been hanging on for a while. Call documents. The actual documents showing up on the website where you can look at the exact orders where George Bush was ordered to attend such and such place. My point was a large.
It's www.swiftboatveteransfortruth.com.
You know, I wanted to get there.
Talk about the people who served with him.
I want to get there, and I can't wait to discuss that with you, but first I want to go to a caller who's been hanging on for a while. Caller, you're on the air with Mark Levine and Tom Robbins. Showing up on the website where you can look at the exact orders where George Bush was ordered to attend such and such place. My point was a large...
It's www.swiftboatveteransfortruth.com.
You know, I wanted to get there.
And
I wanted to get there.
Talk about the people who served with him.
I want to get there, and I can't wait to discuss that with you, but first I want to go to a caller who's been hanging on for a while. Caller, you're on the air with Mark Levine and Tom Robbins.
Oh, yeah, this is Gordon from Michigan.
My point was a large...
It's www.swiftboatveteransfortruth.com.
You know, I wanted to get there.
And
I wanted to get there.
Talk about the people who served with him.
I want to get there, and I can't wait to discuss that with you, but first I want to go to a caller who's been hanging on for a while. Caller, you're on the air with Mark Levine and Tom Robbins.
Oh, yeah, this is Gordon from Michigan.
Hey, Gordon, how are you?
All righty.
What's your comment or question?
Well, I just wonder if Tom can comment.
You know, I wanted to get there.
Talk about the people who served with him.
I want to get there, and I can't wait to discuss that with you, but first I want to go to a caller who's been hanging on for a while. Caller, you're on the air with Mark Levine and Tom Robbins.
Oh, yeah, this is Gordon from Michigan.
Hey, Gordon, how are you?
All righty.
What's your comment or question?
Well, I just wonder if Tom can comment about... George Bush's economic policy.
Get there. I wanted to get there.
Talk about the people who served with him.
I want to get there, and I can't wait to discuss that with you, but first I want to go to a caller who's been hanging on for a while. Caller, you're on the air with Mark Levine and Tom Robbins.
Oh, yeah, this is Gordon from Michigan.
Hey, Gordon, how are you?
All righty.
What's your comment or question?
Well, I just wonder if Tom can comment about George Bush's economic policies, what to expect in the next 4 years. I mean, he's starting to sound like a 21st century Herbert Hoover. I'm wondering what...
You're on the air with Mark Levine and Tom Robbins.
Oh, yeah, this is Gordon from Michigan.
Hey, Gordon, how are you?
All righty.
What's your comment or question?
Well, I just wonder if Tom can comment about George Bush's economic policies, what to expect in the next 4 years. I mean, he's starting to sound like... A 21st century George Bush's economic policies, what to expect in the next 4 years. I mean, he's starting to sound like a 21st century Herbert Hoover. I'm wondering what we've turned the corner to.
All just talking points. It doesn't really have any meaning. But Gordon, go at him.
Well, there's one thing in life, none of intelligence. And I think George Bush is going to find out.
Really, I think is one of the lowest political ploys. We'll talk about it and we'll argue about it here on Elect.
Administration access to decision.
He's starting to sound like a 21st century Herbert Hoover. I'm wondering what we've turned the corner to.
All just talking points. It doesn't really have any meaning. But Gordon, go at him.
Well, there's one thing in life, none of intelligence. And I think George Bush is going to find out.
Really, I think is one of the lowest political ploys. We'll talk about it.
Herbert Hoover. I'm wondering what we've turned the corner to.
All just talking points. It doesn't really have any meaning. But Gordon, go at him.
Well, there's one thing in life, none of intelligence. And I think George Bush is going to find out.
Really, I think is one of the lowest political ploys. We'll talk about it and we'll argue about it here on Elect.
Administration access to decision.
The price of an apartment now stands.
Herbert Hoover. I'm wondering what we've turned the corner to.
All just talking points. It doesn't really have any meaning. But Gordon, go at him.
Well, there's one thing in life, none of intelligence. And I think George Bush is going to find out.
Really, I think is one of the lowest political ploys. We'll talk about it and we'll argue about it here on Elect.
Administration access to decision.
The price of an apartment now stands.
Herbert Hoover. I'm wondering what we've turned the corner to.
All just talking points. It doesn't really have any meaning. But Gordon, go at him.
Well, there's one thing in life, none of intelligence. And I think George Bush is going to find out.
Really, I think is one of the lowest political ploys. We'll talk about it and we'll argue about it here on Elect.
Administration access to decision.
The price of an apartment now stands above $1 million.
Turn the corner.
All just talking points. It doesn't really have any meaning. But Gordon, go at him.
Well, there's one thing in life, none of intelligence. And I think George Bush is going to find out.
Really, I think is one of the lowest political ploys. We'll talk about it and we'll argue about it here on Elect.
Administration access to decision.
The price of an apartment now stands above $1 million. The first time that.
Although I think he largely agrees with me. But here's what, Gordon, go at him.
Well, there's one thing in life, none of intelligence. and I think George Bush is going to find out.
Really, I think is one of the lowest political ploys. We'll talk about it, and we'll argue about it here on
Administration access to decisions.
The price of an apartment now stands above $1 million. The first time that...
Although I think he largely agrees with me. But here's what Steve writes. Steve, that the government... they weren't on his...
And I think George Bush is going to find out...
Really, I think is one of the lowest political ploys. We'll talk about it, and we'll argue about it here on
Administration access to decisions.
The price of an apartment now stands above $1 million. The first time that...
Although I think he largely agrees with me. But here's what Steve writes. Steve, that the government... they weren't on his boat, and they said they served with him. They said he was a liar. And we now...